Will Benjamin Netanyahu wriggle out from under the clutch of serious corruption charges that have been hanging over his prime ministership in Israel? Will he even continue to be the prime minister is another question, because after a second national election in recent weeks, the country is politically deadlocked, and so far Netanyahu has been unable to clinch a proposed national unity government with his main opponent. So some experts fear the country is headed for an unheard of third election. But for Benjamin Netanyahu, the three corruption cases against him are at a critical stage as Israel's Attorney General continues pre-indictment hearings where Netanyahu brashly predicts he will be cleared. I spoke earlier about all of this to Dahlia Shendlin, who is an independent pollster and political analyst.
Well, first of all, we should be accurate that there are three cases that they're investigating. This is not just one case. I mean, he's got a very uphill battle, and the Attorney General has gone to great lengths to ensure that these files are sufficiently robust that they would lead to an indictment. So the Prime Minister's insistence, and that of his legal team, that these cases will be completely shut, seems far-fetched. It seems, some, like you described, somewhere between bravado and simple desperation or wishful thinking, because the Prime Minister knows that he's holding on with every last possible grasp to his position. In the previous round of elections, it seems like he would have preferred to have a government who would provide him with immunity from prosecution. That was the major goal people thought that he was striving for, because he didn't seem quite as convinced at that time. Nothing's changed in the legal situation. So I think that his statements now are primarily rhetoric, indicating an attempt to sort of influence the public environment, which in itself is strange considering that at this point in the legal process, the public environment shouldn't have anything to do with the Attorney General's decision about whether to indict. It should be purely a legal matter. But Netanyahu's main tactic, skill, and approach as a politician has always been to kind of appeal directly to the people, accuse everybody else, all other gatekeepers, of being essentially part of a political conspiracy against him. That's what he knows how to do, and I think that he's doing it in a way on instinct at this point.
You mentioned there that Netanyahu was angling to try to get immunity for himself. Is that still a possibility?
It looks increasingly impossible at this point. The kind of government that is most likely, if there is to be a government at all, which is not a given, but the kind of government that both Likud and the Challenger Party, which of course actually won the election or came in first place, blue and white, they're all talking about a unity government with that blue and white party under former Chief of Staff Benny Gantz. And the main promise to their voters is that they would either not sit in a government where Netanyahu is prime minister as long as he has an indictment hanging over his head, and specifically that there's no way they would provide him with the immunity that he's been insisting on, would be essentially a huge betrayal of their voters. And I can't imagine that they would ever allow it. I think they in a way were elected precisely for the purpose of not providing such immunity for the prime minister, which many view as a manipulation of Israel's legal system entirely for the purposes of personal protection.
But still, you've got a country that almost put Benjamin Netanyahu back into power by in his own right. It was a very close election, wasn't it? Are you surprised at what the result was?
I wasn't truly surprised by the actual numbers. In a long-term analysis of the structure of Israeli society and public opinion and the people who identify themselves according to right, left, and center parties, the results were very consistent and very accurate in terms of my own predictions, not for the actual parties, but for the blocks of parties. My predictions were not hocus-pocus. They're based on the last decade of elections and survey research showing the very, very stable system of how people, how they lean politically. So in terms of the breakdown of the blocks, I wasn't surprised. However, at the last minute, it looked like Netanyahu might just pull off something that he had not had in any of the polls, which was a possible majority of 61 seats for the right-wing parties that would have allowed him to basically continue governing unchallenged, because he would have, in that case, formed a government with right-wing parties without needing any of the center parties, without needing the challenger blue and white. And those right-wing parties probably would have provided him with the immunity that we discussed before. At least most Israelis can agree they were hoping at the very least to have a government at this point. And that's maybe the one surprise, is that the results were not decisive enough to provide a clear path towards a government.
So when we think about a government, the possibilities, you've mentioned the prospect of a third election in Israel in the space of a year, an extraordinary possibility. How possible is that, do you think?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's really a toss-up. But put it this way, before the Tuesday of the elections in September, everybody was sort of joking about it because it didn't seem like even remotely possible. There's a general consensus that the people don't want it and that the political leaders don't want it. That stopped being a joke around midnight on the Tuesday of the elections because the results came in and people realized that it was going to be extremely difficult for all the parties to keep their promises about the kind of coalition they would or wouldn't go into and actually reach a government. And that is still the case. You know, several weeks later, the parties have pretty much still dug into their positions. And I don't want to present these positions equally. I mean, as a scholar of political science and democracy, I mean, the idea that Netanyahu's demand that he be prime minister under any and all circumstances should not be seen on an equal level with the kind of political and substantive demands for content and policy approaches of the other parties. And so the fact that neither side is giving up on those is making it so far, completely impossible. And the idea that there might be a third election is getting more and more realistic. I should say also that the other major shifts that Netanyahu made, I mean, in addition to this, you know, absolute ironclad insistence that he continue being prime minister, the shift that he has made is in rallying the other right-wing parties and organizing them to negotiate the coalition as a bloc, which essentially says even if people voted for a different party on the right wing, they didn't vote for Netanyahu, maybe even purposely left Likud between the April elections and the September elections, now they're negotiating as if they were one party. So if he voted for some other right-wing party, not Lieberman, of course, because he's taken himself out of the coalition, the right-wing coalition game, but you now find yourself essentially as a voter locked into a position of either supporting Netanyahu for prime minister or going into a third election, which is what it looks like will happen if Netanyahu can't form a government, which looks very likely that he won't be able to, gives a mandate to the president. There are not that many paths. I mean, there is a sort of ongoing political process that has to take place, but that certainly increases the likelihood of third elections.
Dahlia Shendlin, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
Pollster and democracy researcher Dahlia Shendlin in Israel.